Good afternoon. My name is Anne Cabal, and on behalf of the Breast Cancer Education Association Board and volunteers, I welcome you to the BCEA webinar education series. I encourage you to grab a pen and paper, as there will be plenty of good information shared in the next hour. Today, we have participants joining us in two ways, via webcast or by phone. For those connected via webcast, please follow along with the slideshow on your screen. Webcast attendees can also submit questions anytime during the session in the box just left to the slides. 2019 is again a year that the BCEA continues to expand our mission of providing breast cancer educational resources. This year's educational programming continues to encourage, engage, and empower those affected by breast cancer in a variety of ways, including webinars such as this one offered throughout the year, participation in and support of culturally appropriate cancer screening, education, and outreach programs to reduce disparities in the burden of cancer. We are very excited to report that three mini conferences focused on reducing these disparities and offering resources and education are being held this year. Two of the mini conferences have already been held, and the third will be offered later this year. Also, through our signature education conference, which is scheduled for October 5th at the Wilder Foundation in St. Paul, this conference will deliver the most up-to-date information on breast cancer diagnosis and treatments and a mobile mammography unit. Conference will feature Dr. Keith Knutson updating us on the newest developments on a breast cancer vaccine. Please mark your calendar for October 5th, and we hope to see you there. We also offer increased ongoing resources on our website and social media channels available 24/7. If you are unable to attend any of our previous webinars, recordings of these sessions are available on the BCEA website at www.breastcancereducation.org under the webinars tab. This is a great way to easily access valuable information at your convenience. We also invite you to join us for a little fun and participate in our upcoming partner fundraising and screening event on August 3rd at Baldman Brewing in Lakeville. Visit our social media channels or website at breastcancereducation.org for complete details. We also welcome your involvement in our organization. We welcome participation on all levels and have many different types of volunteer opportunities available, whether it's just for an hour a year or a couple hours a month. We have exciting plans this year and hope that you can help us deliver education and empowerment to those fighting breast cancer. If you have not done so already yet, please be sure to connect with us on social media. We regularly share and foster discussion on the latest news and resources in breast cancer detection, diagnosis, treatment, and survivorship. We also encourage you to share what you learned today using hashtag BCEAWebinar. Please also keep your eye out for more information for other upcoming webinars. We will share the specific information on all sessions as soon as details are available. And now I'd like to introduce our main speaker for today's webinar. Diane Davies is a wife, mother, grandmother, retired elementary school teacher, breast cancer survivor, volunteer, and author. Diane taught first and third grade for 26 years and supervised student teachers for the University of Wisconsin River Falls the rest of her career. In 2004, Diane was diagnosed with breast cancer. It was during this cancer journey that her writing career began. She and her husband make their home in Denmark Township in Minnesota. Diane's daughter and family live next door, making Diane one very lucky and happy grandmother. Welcome, Diane.
Thank you, Anne, and welcome everyone to Telling Your Child You Have Cancer. My first slide is just a picture of me, and Anne already told you pretty much who Diane Davies is. I just want to add that I have been a wife for nearly 50 years, which, you know, when I think about that, I think, oh, my goodness, where did that time go? And yet when I look in the mirror, I see my mother looking back at me. So I guess I know where that time went. Also, as Ann mentioned, I am a teacher, a breast cancer survivor, an advocate, and now an award-winning author, and happy to be that. On the bottom of the slide here, you see my first two books, From There to Here, A Breast Cancer Journey and Breast Cancer Saved My Life. And then in 2018, I started writing children's books, which actually is something that I've wanted to do all my life, and it's a check on my bucket list that I have now done that. Happy to be here today and happy to talk with you about telling your child about a breast cancer diagnosis or a cancer diagnosis, as it's all pretty transferable. I'd like to introduce you to my friend Jeannie Ann. We see Jeannie Ann right here in the picture in the upper right-hand corner. Jeannie Ann is a typical six-year-old who discovers in my book, Jeannie Ann's Grandma Has Breast Cancer, that her grandmother has breast cancer. And the subsequent story tells about how she and her family face the trials and tribulations of such a medical challenge. And as I said before, this is talking about breast cancer, but it is so transferable to all kinds of cancer diagnosis. What we're going to talk about today is why should I tell my kids about my cancer? And then we're going to prepare for the conversation. We're going to hold the conversation. We're going to talk about what to do after the conversation. And then to wrap up, we're going to talk about the four C's of concern for children when someone they love is diagnosed with cancer. And I think when we get that far in the presentation, you are not going to be surprised at what those four C's are. Okay, so you're sitting out there now listening to me and you're saying, oh, but I don't want to tell my children. I don't want them to know that I have cancer. I want to protect them from the harsh realities of life. I want to keep my cancer diagnosis a secret from everyone, not just my children, but everyone else. And I'm also afraid. I don't want to appear weak or scared or upset. And I certainly don't want to cry in front of someone else. That's going to show that I am weak. Well, let me just tell you that missing out on allowing others to share their love for you is a big mistake when you're facing this kind of a medical challenge. I felt very much the same way. I didn't want anyone to know, and yet people found out, and once they did, I was honored by their love in many, many different ways, and it's a real important part of the journey and a very needed part of the journey. So let's get started. Let's focus a little bit more on this why. In Jeannie Ann's story, at the very beginning of the book, Jeannie Ann comes home from school and everything is different. Mother forgets to give her a hug. Mother forgets the snack. And even baby brother has his same pajamas on that he wore the night before to bed. Jeannie Ann, as all children, are very, very perceptive. And this kind of a break in a routine is her tip-off that something's wrong. Any break in routine is very frightening for children and very upsetting for them. It's the routine that they thrive on, and it's the routine that makes them feel safe. And as hard as the truth is, children imagine it worse. Here you see Jeannie Ann after dinner that evening. She's in her pajamas. She's ready for bed. And she hears her mom and dad whisper. They haven't talked a lot during dinner, which was another break in the routine. And also she heard the word C-A-N-C-E-R, and it frightened her because she knows what that what cancer means, what that word means, as she's in first grade and learning how to read. So with this lack of information, children will begin to fill in the blanks themselves, and sometimes they fill them in very scary, unhealthy ways, totally missing what is really happening. Again, we see Jeannie Ann very, very concerned. She's in bed. She's waiting for her mother to come and say her prayers with her. And she's very confused. And she asks Mother, am I the one that has cancer? Did I do something wrong to make this happen? Does my baby brother have cancer? Do you have cancer, Mom? Continues to keep going and going. And also, by keeping cancer a secret like this, that you make the child feel very shut out of the family and left out. Or also they begin to believe that it's too terrible to even talk about. In Jeannie Ann's story, Mom reassures her that she is not the one with cancer, that she did not cause the cancer, and finally that the cancer is not catching to her, and that's very comforting for Jeannie Ann to know that. Also, if a child hears about the cancer from someone else, say a neighbor or some children in the neighborhood that have been talking about it, that destroys trust in their parent. The child believes, golly, they don't love me enough to even trust me to tell me what's going on. And it just makes the parental trust issue very difficult to handle. Also, it's impossible to shield children from the stressful parts of life, and it's our job as parents to teach them how to manage these kinds of challenges in our life. We need to model for them. You know, we don't need to say step by step by step, this is how you handle stress. We need to show them by actually modeling for them and handling our stress in that way. Children also need to know that you're going to be honest with them during both the hard times and the good times. If you're not honest with them, it's very difficult to know when it is that you're telling the truth. See on the bottom here, when a child thinks the parent is not being truthful, it becomes hard for them to know when you are telling the truth. And certainly we want to trust what we have to say. Also, children blame themselves. They feel they did or said something to cause the illness, very much like Jeannie Ann did at the beginning of our story. They tend to see the illness as a punishment for something that they've done. If I wouldn't have dumped my peas in the waste paper basket, my grandmother would still be healthy today. And it's totally unrelated to what's actually happening, but that's kind of how their little minds work. Another reason to talk about cancer with your children or a cancer diagnosis is that the treatment effects can be terrifying without information. Mother comes home or grandmother comes home or dad with loss of hair, exhaustion, nausea, sleeping all the time. Those can be very frightening to children if they do not have the facts behind why that's happening. And for all of us, children of any age, talking about our feelings makes our feelings less overwhelming, less upsetting, and less scary, even for us adults. So let me just take a minute here to stop and kind of quickly repeat once again what it is that, why it is that we need to talk to our children about a cancer diagnosis. First of all, Children need a routine for comfort and feeling safe, and any break in that routine is very upsetting to them. Number two, children imagine things as worse than they are. They fill in the blank themselves without the correct information, and the information they fill in with can be much worse than what the true facts are. Three, secrets make the child feel that they are left out of the family. It closes lines of communication. Number four, hearing the news from others, neighbors or neighborhood kids, destroys family trust. We as parents need to model for our children how to handle stressful situations. Being truthful at all times builds parental trust in the children. The children trust what their parents say, and hopefully the parents trust what their children say. Children many times feel the illness is punishment for something that they did. Treatment effects can be terrifying without the facts. And finally, talking about feelings is helpful for children of all ages, including adults. All right, moving on to the second part, preparing for the conversation, getting ready to have this talk with our family. When should you have this little chat? If possible, you need to wait until you know all the facts and have a treatment plan. But that's being said in the real world, I guess. And sometimes it doesn't happen that way, and sometimes they need to be told before all of that information is available. I wouldn't wait too long to have that conversation for fear that they may hear it from someone else, and as we've talked about, that is not good. Who needs to share this information? It needs to be, if at all possible, the person that has the cancer diagnosis. Your children need to hear it from you, not from someone else. You need to choose a time when you can focus on all of your attention on the conversation. You need to make it a quiet time where there's few distractions. And you need to make sure that there is enough time for questions afterwards, not that you need to rush off to a ball game or rush off to play practice or something afterwards. It needs to be a quiet, prolonged time when you can talk with your children and answer all of the questions that they have. You also need to prepare for this conversation. Usually this conversation would be held at home where everyone would be comfortable and safe and be involved. And who is involved? Well, the loved one with the cancer, if at all possible, should be the person to tell the information, or if that's not possible, the child's parent. And all members, I feel, of the immediate family need to be a part of this conversation. I would add others only if they add to the child's comfort, like a favorite relative. People from outside the family could possibly add more stress. So I'd be real deliberate about who should be there and give that a lot of thought beforehand, before you actually have the conversation. One thing that you need to do before the conversation even starts is to practice saying, "I have cancer." The first time I said that, I just kind of totally fell apart. I went to pieces, so to speak, because once it came out of my mouth, it became my reality. And so you need to practice that. If you're anything like me, you need to say that a few times and practice what your face is going to look like and how you're going to react to that statement. you know there's going to be reaction from the people you're saying it to. So you need to be in control of yourself in order to do that. Again, getting ready for the conversation, having the facts before you. You never know what kind of questions the kids are going to come up with. They probably don't need to know all of the facts. However,
Diane? I think we've lost Diane temporarily. I am wondering, we also have Sarah Maines from Angel Foundation with some resources. I'm wondering maybe, Sarah, if we can bring you in at this point so that you can talk about some resources that Angel Foundation offers.
Absolutely. Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you very much.
Great. Thanks for having me here. My name is Sarah Maines. I work with Angel Foundation, and Angel is a Minnesota-based foundation. I'm just going to move through the slides quick so we can all see this. For those who aren't aware, we serve Minnesota adults who have cancer to pay for non-medical supplies and non-medical bills, and also have a Facing Cancer Together program. And Angel has worked with Diane closely in this last year. We used her books with the families that we serve, and it was a great opportunity for us to come together to make sure the great resources and tips that Diane is giving today, that we have helpful information and next steps for adults, whether that's a parent or a grandparent that have cancer, so they can do something else and to find a place to turn to receive that education and support and social opportunities. I wanted to touch on our emergency financial assistance for those who aren't aware. If this is a service that we can provide, we want to make sure that everyone is aware. For individuals who are in active cancer treatment, we want to be able to remove some of the stressful barriers while they're receiving treatment and help pay for larger non-medical costs, so such as rent or mortgage, your utility bills, travel expenses for gas cards, and then also gift cards for grocery stores, as a way to really decrease that stress so a person can focus on themselves. We have never said no to applications that have been approved on our side, and really want to make sure that we can be here to look at financial toxicity and reducing those burdens. For people who do want information about that, please go to our website or call Angel Foundation at 612-627-9000. To move on to our Facing Cancer Together programs, this program is one of a kind. We are the only place in Minnesota that specifically focuses on children, preteens, and teens. Any child, or really that whole 0 to 26 age spectrum, when they have a parent or a grandparent, an adult in their life, that the adult is the one with cancer. Facing Cancer Together was brought into Angel Foundation over 10 years ago to make sure that we were filling that vital need of children who need support. We were hearing about adults saying, I don't know how to talk about cancer with my kids, everything that Diane was saying. So we had created this program, no cost to our families, to make sure they have a place to turn to. Something unique about our program is that we help all types of cancers. We work with any health system, so there are no barriers in terms of families not receiving help, and that they are able to come to our programs as long as they want or forever. So helping people at the onset of diagnosis, during treatment, through survivorship, during end-of-life issues, or after death, making sure that families truly know that we are there to turn for them to turn to. Some of the programs that I wanted to highlight to give all of you an opportunity to learn, what does Angel Foundation do and how can they help? We have our Camp Angel program that's underway this summer. We do two different camps. Again, looking at these programs, it's essentially kindergarten through end of high school to make sure that children are seeing oftentimes for the first time that they are not alone. They're surrounded by all of these other children that have similar stories to them. Diane mentioned this a little bit, but it can be isolating for children in a school setting to realize that no one else is quote unquote like them or have a parent with cancer, and they don't understand that impact. And oftentimes children and especially teens will shy away from sharing their experience because their friends aren't able to relate. So you can really see this huge relief wash over our children when they come to our programs, realizing that other kids are just like them. Our second session of camp is coming in a few weeks in August. We also have a thriving teen outreach program. From a developmental standpoint, Facing Cancer Together really does a great job of seeing age-specific needs from a developmentally appropriate standpoint of how are each ages, how are they understanding the concepts of cancer, how you get cancer, what type of treatments are involved, what are side effects for treatment, how can we be a good caretaker to our loved one, how can we take good care of ourselves. The teen outreach program, you see a group of children that especially want to be as normal as possible. We have monthly programs that we have found and heard from our teens that people finally get them. And even if they don't talk about cancer at the teen outreach programs, they feel safe. And when they dive in and talk about cancer, that they're really learning and asking questions, but feeling safe and knowing that their needs are being met and they're learning more about what's going on. We do that on a monthly basis. That might range from going rock climbing and mini golfing and having a movie and pizza night, doing a corn maze and fall activities. Again, all of these programs that we go through are free of charge for families. Our family night out is an opportunity where parents drop off their kids at the Angel Foundation office and then the parents go to a restaurant nearby. We always focus on that age appropriate, the therapeutic activities, games, art projects to dive into feelings and emotions, understanding treatment, taking care of ourselves, looking at wellness and health of our own. Those are excellent opportunities, again, to connect families in a social setting, but also educationally. Our Angel Pack program started about 5 years ago. We are currently in over 60 sites throughout the metro, and Angel Foundation packs and provides free backpacks for any adult that has cancer to make sure that the children in their life, whether that's a niece or a nephew, their direct children, grandchild, we want to make sure that there's packs that whether it's the onset of diagnosis or when the adult said, I need a little more help and encouragement, these backpacks are stuffed with therapeutic toys and tools, such as bubbles to remind children to breathe, stress balls, journals and markers, emotion magnets, all of these different tools that kids can learn and explore. And we also have our own guidebooks that we have written throughout the years to make sure that kids can grab a shorter kind of 16-page condensed book and really jump in and learn on their own. Also a way for parents to read their children's books to see what are we learning and how can we talk about this. We supply parents with a great guidebook too. In a few slides, I will share a link with you. Those are all downloadable right now so they can be accessed and right at your fingertips. We have additional parenting classes or opportunities for parents to connect with each other, talking oftentimes with other parents for the first time about what's going on and how their families are doing and connecting with each other. We do art workshops. We work with art therapists and art therapy students really to build creative and really helpful projects for children and families to process what they're going through. And we also want to be available for phone consults. We understand that some families might not have the ability or opportunity to come to our programs if they live outside of the metro, even out of state. We want people to know that they can call us and we're here. We'll spend as much time as they need. Sometimes parents will call and say, can you walk me through what to say? Or this is the situation. Sometimes after families have talked to their kids, they'll call with scenarios. A question that I have received through the years will be parents of a 6 or 7 year old that will say, my child started wetting their bed. They've been potty trained for years though. What's going on? We'll walk through the parent with the parents and say that would be an age-appropriate reaction to a really stressful situation. So what does that mean? We want to make sure that parents just don't feel like they're alone. And all too often during treatment and on the clinical side when you're going to your appointments, that is oftentimes something that care providers aren't intentionally and trying to skip over. They want to focus on the patient and be as helpful as possible. Or there are moments that I've talked with doctors and nurses that say it's just a pretty heavy conversation to bring this up with parents, and we usually don't have the time to ask them how their kids are doing. So that's why we really encourage parents, call us. We want to make sure that we are here to help them. Also a space for educators. We will get calls from teachers and school districts that say, how do we help the students in our classroom? So really to be the advocates in our community to support children and parents so they don't feel alone. A few quotes and pictures from the families that we've helped through the years, talking about how we've normalized their cancer experience, the surprise that parents and families feel when the teen actually wants to talk about what's going on, and that feeling of knowing that it was fun. We talk about our programs being a combination of serious and silly. Some of our programs are simply just to enjoy and have fun and maybe have an evening where we don't have to focus on what's going on at home. We have a water park night, for example, coming up that we don't even talk about cancer. We just want families to have fun and be together. But there are other programs that we do talk about. Well, what is a port? And how does chemo work? And how does that kill the bad cells? And what does radiation mean? How can we define a laser beam and how radiation works to a young child? And equally, how do you explain it differently to a teenager so they could help others understand? So really looking at things from a medically and developmentally sensitive way, and also creating an opportunity for fun. Kids learn through play and movement and art and getting dirty. So we want to make sure that all of our programs highlight those various ways of learning and coping. I have a list of online resources here. When I was mentioning the guidebooks, those are specifically found in our Angel Pack backpacks. You'll see the four pictures on the bottom that just kind of highlights when you go to our website. You'll either see those pictures linked or there's a actual clickable link that will say child guidebook, teen guidebook. Also highlighting for preteens, also highlighting for parents. I will note the parent guidebook is excellent because it goes through the 0 to 26 years of a child lifespan versus the individual books for the children just focus on their age. I encourage healthcare professionals, for any of you that are on the phone right now too, a great opportunity. I hear from social workers, financial navigators, nurses saying, I read through the guidebook and I just didn't even think about some of these things. It was so helpful to be able to read through what I'm giving the parents. Do that. Like I love that, to be a self-advocate and try to learn and create more ways to engage with the people that you're helping are wonderful. For parents and families, as I mentioned earlier, I always suggest take a look, read through the parent guidebook, kind of underline and highlight. Diane did a great job of mentioning to say, like, practice saying, I have cancer out loud. We reinforce a lot with parents and kids to make sure that they're aware the child did not do anything to cause this cancer. What are repetitious words that we can use that continue to help the families? So the clickable guidebooks are there. They work on iPads, very user-friendly. We also have hard copies here, so if that's something that someone needs additional help getting that or wanting a hard copy, do give us a call. We have additional resources that we have online and separate from the guidebooks. We have a clickable document that explains how to tell your child you have cancer. We try to do like very brief yet thorough ways of giving you specific information, whether it summarizes, read verbatim what this says so we can teach you how to talk to your child about having cancer, or giving tips on how a child might respond to this information, how parents can ask additional follow-up questions based on their responses. We have another resource, Age Appropriate Tips for Talking to Your Child, that goes again through the age spectrum, that breakdown. How to Prepare Your Child for Your Surgery. This is a document that we have added recently, helping parents understand whether their port is going to be placed or they're having a mastectomy or a tumor is being removed. How do you know that your child is going to understand what's happening? The more conversations and openness that you can have with your family is going to build a trusting relationship and will actually allow your child to feel prepared and lessen their stress. And then finally, we have a document on there, basic definitions of cancer and treatment. A fairly long list of A to Z definitions, but a great way, oftentimes even for adults, to understand, okay, that's what that word means, but also for their kids to be able to go through their through those lists, being able to ask their parents and dive into specific words. Lastly, we have an app that we've released this year. You can go on your mobile device to where you download your apps and search Angel Foundation, and the app will pop up as a way to also get you to those guidebooks and some of the resources that I just mentioned, so they're right at your fingertips. We also have an opportunity if people want to apply for a financial assistance grant, they can go through the mobile app to do that. There's a notebook section. We encourage people, whether they bring a medical advocate to their appointment or a place for patients to write notes, that it's all in one place. This has been super helpful, though, and I also want to take an opportunity to say, depending on who's on the phone, what can all of our involvement and responsibility be to telling people about these resources? I think all too often people will either shy away from letting someone know what helped them. By doing that, though, patients who don't hear about what's out there and how they can be helped oftentimes feel like, it just must be me. I'm having a hard time knowing how to talk to my kids, or there's a lot of stress in the house, but no one else has told me that they've experienced this, so I'm all alone. The mobile apps or handing out a guidebook or talking about the programs is a very easy and simple touch point to help that person. Anne will be sending out a link later on that will be listing current programs. We do offer that in a flyer format, so for anyone who is interested in becoming involved and having their kids or the parent come to the group, we want to make sure that you have access to that information and are able to come to us for help or have us offer other suggestions.
Sarah,
I want to thank
you
for your time.
Yeah, thank you for sharing so many resources and information, and to the Angel Foundation for offering that to families that really need it. I want to transition back into our conversation with Diane. And Diane, I'm going to go back to the conversation piece, and I'll transition back to your slides while you're answering this. But a question was raised, and it was about what age do you recommend the child to be included in conversations?
Okay, first of all, I want to apologize. I'm not sure what happened there, but I think my phone went dead, unfortunately. This has kind of been my unfortunately week. I had a TV interview on Saturday afternoon, and as I walked into the studio, the sky opened up and poured down rain on me. So I looked absolutely like a drowned rat from Minnesota when I walked in there. And then today, now my phone goes dead. I don't know. Anyway, I apologize. I'm back, and hopefully this phone won't go dead on me, too. To answer your question, Anne, I feel very strongly that all members of the family should be included in this conversation, even the babies, even if it's just to show family unity. Children as young as 3 and 4 certainly understand a change in routine, and they can feel that all is not right as well. They know when you're sad. They're very in tune to what's happening. So I think the younger the child is, the simpler the information needs to be. But I do think that the entire family should be involved in the conversation.
Excellent. I think we're back on the slide that we left off on. If not, feel free to just advance to where you would like to
be. Well, I'm not sure where I was, so let's just go back here. I'll go and go over this a little quickly again. Okay, and as we heard, too, that practicing saying out loud, I have cancer, and how important that is. Did we get that far? Did they hear that?
Yes.
Do you know? Okay.
Yep. And right, then so it was prepared with all the facts is, I believe, where you left off.
Okay. All right. And what I mean by that is you're not going to know what kind of questions your children are going to ask. Some of them may be very simple, like, well, okay, that's nice, but what are we going to have for supper tonight? You never know, you know, what children are going to come up with. Older children, of course, will delve deeper into the topic, but the younger children just want to know the bare facts and want to know that, okay, we're all on the same page and we're all going to handle this together. Also, being prepared to say, to answer the question, will you die? This is another question that you need to think about before the conversation as to how am I going to answer that question. And many times that depends on your own religious faith, your own beliefs, as to, you know, how that question would be answered. Sometimes we've told children that, well, dying is just like going to sleep. The only problem with that is that could cause more stress for a child as they're trying to go to sleep themselves, thinking, oh, my goodness, if I go to sleep, I'm going to die. I'm not going to be around again tomorrow, or that sort of thing. So you have to be really careful with those kinds of phrases with children, because they will pick up on them. And also dying, I guess, is a possibility that we don't ever want to say, I'm never going to leave you, I'm never going to die, because that's not true. And there again, we don't want to fill our children's heads with false ideas. And so, don't make a promise that you can't stick to. Okay, it's also important to talk about the part of the body that's affected and the treatment plan. And now, again, I have to say, in simple terms is all that you need to say. And then you keep those details as simple as possible, and you let the child lead with their questions. Some of the older children will want to go deeper, and some of the younger children will be satisfied just to know that you have cancer in your big toe or whatever it may happen to be. Also, we don't know why I got cancer. That is a topic that you need to include in your discussion. As we talked about before, if you don't talk about that, some children go off into their little fantasy world and believe that it's they who caused the cancer to happen. Details, too many, and I want to just jump back up again about what part of the body is affected in the treatment plan. If you give too many details, sometimes the details can add more alarm, and, you know, you're giving them information that they don't really even need to know at this time. So I would tend to stay away from that and let the children lead with their questions. Okay, this is where I thought I was, but I didn't know when my phone went dead, so this is where I'm starting again. It's important to share with your kids that this cancer is not contagious, that they're not going to catch cancer from you by giving you a hug or giving you a kiss or carrying your plate away from the table that would have cancer germs on it. That's not the case. And they also need to be assured that it's not their fault. You cannot cause cancer by your actions. And sometimes children just need that reassurance to know that they did not in any way cause this to happen. If you think back to Jeannie Ann's response in the story, she went right to, what did I do to make this happen? And that's a pretty normal response for children to make. All right. Also, another really big piece that's important to share with your children is, what are the plans for how the child will be cared for during this time? Children, especially young children, are pretty self-centered little creatures, and they need to be sure that their needs are going to be met, even though there's a problem in the family. So who will take care of me? Where will I be while you're sick or in the hospital? Where will I eat? Where will I sleep? And all of those things are so very important to them. So I suggest that you let your child have a voice in deciding where they're going to be, if they're going to be at grandma's or if they're going to be at an aunt's or uncle's or the next door neighbor's, and let them have a say in that plan as well. Also, reassure that no matter what happens, the child will be cared for. They need to understand that. And again, they probably don't need to know who and how. They just need to know that, yes, somebody is going to take care of me. The older children may have more questions about, well, who and how will that happen? And as I said earlier, allow the child to have some choices about their own care. Makes them feel more a part of the solution rather than the problem. And it's important. I skipped one again. Golly, here. You need to try to keep their life as normal as possible under these new circumstances. And it's important for them to know that it's okay to be happy and it's okay to laugh and to have some fun during this time. And as we were hearing about the Angel Foundation and how they even plan for just fun outings, to kind of take the children's minds off what's actually happening within their family or what could be happening in their family, and letting them realize that it's still okay to smile and it's okay to have a good time. It's important, too, to let the child share somehow in your experience, and you can give them little tasks to help with according to their age. And remembering, however, that teens can help out more, but also teens need to still have their own time and their own space if and when possible. We can't dump all of the responsibility onto their shoulders and expect them to just carry on as normal. Another thing to always reassure is that they can come to you with questions, and even if you don't have the answers, you'll try to help them find the answer. Each family conversation that's held is going to be different, and it'll be different as each family is different. If you feel more comfortable, you might want to write down like an agenda of things that you're going to talk about and have that with you, and then check them off as you talk about them and share that information. So that nothing is forgotten in that conversation. And then once the conversation is over with, that should not be the end of the conversation. You still need to make time for your children and your teens. It would be helpful to schedule time on your calendar for alone time with each child. So that maybe it's 10 or 15 minutes when you can sit together and read a book, talk, share happenings in their life, and just be near you. I feel very, very strongly that how important that is. And also encouraging your children to do their own thing each and every day, to try and keep their routine as much as possible. Is also comforting to them, too. And as a parent, we need to check in on our children on an ongoing basis. They need to know there are no bad questions. It's okay to ask what you need to ask. If it's an embarrassing question, that's okay too. We're family, and we talk about those kinds of things together. If at all possible, it would be good to include your child with you in a clinic or a treatment visit. Many times, the chemo treatment takes an hour or a couple hours, and it would be kind of fun to have a child sitting there with you reading stories, or you reading stories to them, or in that way they're feeling as if, and they are, being part of the experience with you. And it's important for them to know that they can share. Also, as a parent, sometimes I think we feel that we can never say, I don't know, but that's not true, because we are a parent. We're not perfect. We do not have all the answers, and we can say, I don't know the answer to that. And then here again comes the topic of telling a child that a dying patient is going to sleep, and it can make the bedtime frightening and confusing. I just wanted to make sure we got that in there. Also, if your child seems withdrawn, has ongoing behavior changes, or prolonged disinterest in normal activities, that's when you need to seek professional help. And where you start, where you go first, is to your medical team. Many times they'll have suggestions for you as to who to see, where to go, and then the child won't slip between the cracks. And as we heard earlier, the Angel Foundation is another good place to check to see what kind of resources they might have available to help you as well. And I also suggest that you alert the child's school and the teachers and counselors and other people on staff can certainly help you watch for signs that your child may be struggling. So don't forget that as well. In preparing for this webinar, I came across the four C's of child concern when someone they love is diagnosed with cancer. And I found this at a website called kidsgrief.ca. And the title of the book was Talking About Dying and Death, and it was chapter number 5. And the four C's are, did I cause it? Did I cause it by my behavior, by something that I didn't do or I did do? Can I catch it? Will I get cancer by touching you or being around you? Can I cure it? If my behavior is really good, will the cancer go away? And then finally, who will take care of me? What will happen to me? Your child depends on you, and a cancer journey can be a loving, growing opportunity when handled together as a family of love and kindness. Before I end, I just want to share with you some suggestions that are in the back of my book, Jeannie Ann's Grandma Has Breast Cancer, by Diane Davies, and illustrated by C.A. Nobens. On the very last page, there's some suggestions. It says, some suggestions for you and your children when a family member is diagnosed with cancer. Number one, listen. Good communication helps everyone in the family cope. Number two, listen. Take your child, talking with your child honestly and helping them express their emotions will help them feel safe and secure. Three, listen. There is no age limit for the need to cry. Four, listen. Sharing information early on will help build trust. Five, listen. Be sure to ask if they have questions. If you don't know the answers, assure them that you will find out. Six, listen. Consider your child's age and keep in mind there is no need to talk beyond what is asked. Seven, listen. Let your children know that what they are feeling is normal and okay. Eight, listen. Be honest and be hopeful. Number nine, listen. Make sure your children know that nothing they did or said caused the cancer. And number 10, keep your children informed throughout the cancer journey. by listening. Thank you for joining me today. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
We do have some questions, Diane. So
the first one,
can you just talk a little bit more about teaching children how to manage stressful challenges?
Absolutely, I can. A stressful challenge at any age is something that we need to focus on and to look at and prepare ourselves for, because stress hurts, but also stress can help too. It presents opportunity for growth if we can handle it correctly. So we need to take a look at stress from a growth perspective that has the power to influence the situation. In handling stress, we need to think about the worst-case scenario and then go back from there and realize where we are at in that continuum. Deep breathing is good help. Music is good help. Stretching is good help. Even any kind of activity, walking, whatever, is all really good help. And you need to think about handling stress in a problem-solving situation. So the four steps in solving a problem, as we all know, is to, first of all, understand the problem. Secondly, devise a plan. Three, carry out the plan. Four, check and interpret what happened, and then start over again and try again. So, you know, it's easy to say handle your stress, but that's a good question. It's nice to know that there are ways out there that can help handle that stress.
Well, thank you for that. There are two other questions. Hopefully we'll have time for both. Wondering if you have any ideas. One of our participants asked about ideas on how to deal with a co-parent or spouse that believes it's better to hide information from a child to spare him or her that grief.
Okay, that's a tough one. And as I said, many, many families are different, or every family is different. It's nice if you can have a front that's together and where the husband and the wife agree. It's very difficult to have the other type of situation. And I guess the two people would have to sit down and problem solve, you know, think about this, talk about this, put, you know, the positives for sharing, the negatives for sharing, and try to help the other person understand the importance of helping their children by sharing this information with them. I'm not so sure that gives a whole lot of help, but that is a tough situation. That would be hard to handle.
I think it's taking some of the information and strategies that you provided in today's webinar and applying, you know, using that information
sure.
and being child-focused, perhaps, would rather than
exactly
dealing
yes.
with your internal. And then the last question was, where do you turn for help if the child withdraws or shows a prolonged disinterest in normal activities?
Okay, that's the red flag that gets raised, and that's when you seek help. And the first place I would go is to my cancer care team. They generally would have some suggestions for you. As I said earlier, another place I would go would be to a school counselor. Perhaps they can get you in the right direction. And also the Angel Foundation. They are very helpful in providing the need for needs of families during this kind of a crisis time.
Well, thank you so much. Gracious thanks to our speakers, Diane Davies and Sarah Maines, and for everyone for joining our webinar today. Again, please share what you learned via our social media channels, and we hope to see you on the next webinar. Thank you very much.